For nearly 150 years, a historically black private university in Nashville has prided itself on its liberal arts studies and its music. Vocal ensembles at Fisk University have been there about as long as the campus, but the songs performed there today might well have sounded very different had it not been for the efforts of one of its first music directors. A new CD shines a light on the efforts of John Work II. It's called There Breathes a Hope, and as Jeff Bossert of member station WILL reports, it also reopens a debate over whether so-called Negro spirituals are integral parts of America's music history or cruel reminders of slavery.
Between 1909 and 1916, the Fisk Jubilee Quartet recorded more than 40 songs.
There is a farm in Gilead to make the wounded whole.
The tenor with the eerily high voice in this recording is John Work II. He was a scholar, musician, and anthropologist who collected these songs from the days of slavery, had them published, and recorded many of them with the quartet.
Sometimes I grow discouraged. I think my work's in vain. But then the Holy Spirit revives my soul again.
When Work came to Fisk University in 1891, the institution had already used music as a way to save the school from insolvency. The first Fisk Jubilee singers toured the world performing for Queen Victoria, and what they were performing was just as significant. They switched from operatic arias to religious songs. But by the time Work came to Fisk, the choir had disbanded and was all but forgotten, in part because of those very songs.
Because of their very sacred nature, they had been an essential part of the insular slave worship.
Author Doug Saroff has traced the earliest history of black vocal harmonies and wrote the liner notes for the new collection.
Further, white minstrel performers had seized on the spiritual songs and subjected them to parody and ridicule, ridiculing the slaves' religion as well as the songs.
Saroff says there was a reluctance to perform spirituals following emancipation because they were seen as a degrading reminder of slave life. He says freedmen were anxious to put this era behind them and saw a college education as a way to achieve that. But Saroff says Work saw things differently.
For John Work, the spirituals preserved the religious faith and wisdom of his forebears, and he took great pride in the racial heritage of sacred folk music, and especially the fact that the songs in his mind contained no trace of hatred or revenge against the slave masters and oppressors.
John Work II was the son of a slave, and he eventually convinced the university to let the singers go back out on tour. Reduced from a chorus to men's quartet for financial reasons, they made their first recordings in 1909 for the Victor label. The Fisk Jubilee Quartet became messengers for black music, says Tim Brooks, author of the book Lost Sounds, a history of the earliest African-American recordings.
They only toured in the North, of course, usually to a kind of an upper-educated group in churches and things like that. They didn't play vaudeville or broad-based entertainment. So when those records came out from Victor, the big record company, in 1910, they spread across the country, and people everywhere, including people who would never allow a black person in their front parlor, bought those records.
Some blacks felt the Fisk Jubilee singers were pandering to white audiences, but Brooks says there were fans, including Bohemian composer Antonin Dvorak, who believed black Americans should look to their own roots and traditions for music and build on them.
Another very prominent school of thought was that, no, they should show that they can do everything that the white man can do and do it as well or even better. That is, follow the European tradition, go into great art, and show how well they could do it. Roland Hayes himself pursued that very, very strictly.
Roland Hayes was the most prominent singer to come out of the Fisk Jubilee Quartet.
Methuselah was the oldest man. He lived
969. He died and went to heaven, Lord, in due time. Now Methuselah was a witness. Oh, my Lord, oh, Methuselah was a witness. Oh, my Lord.
Hayes went on to become a lyric tenor. Translating the power of his voice and the rest of the quartet recordings for modern ears turned out to be a challenge for Richard Martin, co-owner of Archaeophone Records. He says the shellac discs and wax cylinders compiled for this CD set were released years before standard playback speeds existed, and with only a cappella voices to guide him, Martin sought some advice.
The recommended speeds, as they applied, made this material sound like it was funeral music. And by consulting with an expert and testing out some theories and comparing it to what we knew about what the group was supposed to sound like, we were able to make the changes to the pitching that made it much more vibrant, much more jubilant, and it just clicked.
Surprisingly, John Rourke II's contributions to African-American music on the Fisk campus were largely overshadowed by those of his son. John Rourke III spent more than 40 years at Fisk, not only as a student and teacher, but leader of the Jubilee Singers, and was the first African-American chair of the school's music department. Today, Anthony Williams is an associate professor of music at Fisk. He did his dissertation on John Rourke III, who he knew.
The research his son did was more extensive. Therefore, he probably overshadowed his father in that regard. But I believe without his father's work, I'm not sure where his son would have been in terms of his work and his research.
John Rourke II left the Fisk campus under a cloud. It's unclear whether he was dismissed or quit, perhaps because the university remained uncomfortable with the kind of music he championed. For NPR News, I'm Jeff Bossert.
You can hear music from the Fisk Jubilee Quartet at nprmusic.org. And this is NPR's Weekend Edition, directed by Justine Cannon, produced by Elaine Heinzman, Kimberly Adams, Peter Breslow, Walter Ray Watson, Leah Scarpelli, Justin O'Neill, Tinbeat Armaeus, and Becky Paris. Our technical director today is Kevin Waite, our librarian, Kim Maleski. Melissa Goh is our web producer. The show is produced today by Sarah Lucy Oliver and edited by Tony Marcano, so ably assisted by Deborah George and Rebecca Abrahams. The senior producer of Weekend Edition is Bridget Kelly. And we say goodbye today to senior editor Jenny Burgle. She came to Weekend Edition after many years as an investigative reporter and editor. She now returns to that work. Miscreants, beware. We give her our thanks and send her all of our best. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.